This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Leslie Solomon. Leslie's the Chief Innovation Officer at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute itself is one of the most innovative places in the world. So thrilled to get a chance to visit with Leslie about what does it mean to be the Chief Innovation Officer at literally one of the most innovative places ever. Leslie, can you take a moment to introduce yourself?
Yes, thank you for having me. So I live in the Boston area. I have two boys that are 10 and 12. My husband used to travel a lot for work, but we've had him a lot around this year, which has been really nice, one of the upsides of COVID. And our big news is that we got a puppy this year.
Important question is what kind of puppy?
Moby is a Cavapoo, and he's the new love of our life. So we call him the pandemic puppy.
All right, it's probably the cutest thing ever, actually. When you think about innovation, do you think about the breeding of Cavalier St. Charles and poodles? Is that part of innovation?
I guess it would be. I guess it would be, because innovation is really about how to make things better and coming up with new ways to do that. So I guess if the Cavapoo is cuter and a better dog than both of those, then it is innovation.
Yes, absolutely. So talk to us about, you've got this great, you know, sort of career in innovation, and talk about CIO, Chief of Innovation at Dana-Farber. I mean, Dana-Farber is magnificently run by Dr. Glimcher in a brilliant place. Mm-hmm. And talk about innovation.
Yeah, so I've been in this role for about 4 years now. And the scientific capital at Dana-Farber on a daily basis continues to blow me away. It's, I guess, the way our scientists question, hypothesize, the way they explore, the way they think is like nothing I've ever experienced before. And just to hear and to learn about the new paths they're going down to explore ways to treat and ultimately potentially cure patients is really kind of an exciting place to be, an exciting thing to be around. My job is to help get that science or technology to patients as fast as possible, which more frequently than not means finding innovative ways to fund that work, to de-risk it further, and to accelerate the time it gets to patients. So that's what I think about, is that the only thing between our scientists and treatments for patients is time and money. And that's how I think about the work that I do, is how do I help them speed that up?
And how does that work? I mean, you've got, Dana-Farber truly has this great reputation of being bedside and benchside, you know, science and delivery both. How do you work to move? I mean, I know they've got some of the most important therapeutic improvements or accelerations in cancer and oncology care. In some of the vaccines, immunotherapy have been developed, and some of the great work's been done at Dana-Farber. How do you implement yourself into that sort of pivot point to help them pivot and accelerate that and get them the funding or get them the processing to move things along faster? Because people are really, truly relying on it. I mean, you know, cancer patients throughout the world are relying on Dana-Farber and other institutions like Dana-Farber. There's not many in the world moving things forward more quickly to help we save lives.
Yeah, and I feel that pressure, right? I feel that if I can help get this science to patients, then we will succeed. And so I spend as much time talking to outside partners, whether it be pharma, biotech, investors, as I do talking to our inside faculty and to my team members on the innovation team. And part of what kind of drives me is to make the match, to make the right match. So hearing from a faculty member what they're working on, what they don't have access to, what resources they need to move their work forward, whether it be a collaborator or funding or even just a thought partner. And then on the other side, talking with our external partners about what they're looking for and what they want to fund or what they want to see more of. And so I find that a lot of times I'm playing a little bit more of a matchmaker to bring those people together.
And talk about that a little bit more. When you say matchmaker, is it the matchmaker between what oncologists want and feel they need to help treat cancer patients? Is it a matchmaker between funders that will fund some of this and what they want to prioritize? Or where is that match being made? Just elaborate a little bit further for us.
Yeah, it's a little bit more on the funding side. So I'll give you an example. This week I talked to one of our lead scientific faculty members who works a lot in the genetic space or the gene therapy space. And he and someone in his lab are working on something really exciting. And they wanted to understand what the best path was for moving that science forward. And sometimes it's, you know, do we need to keep this in-house longer? Do we need to put more of our own internal dollars into this to de-risk it so that we can, you know, move it along a little bit further in-house? Or is this ready to be licensed, and is the right pathway a license to a pharma or a biotech company? Or on the, you know, the other side is this so kind of innovative that it really needs to be a new co? It needs to be its own new company. And then who's the right investor? Who's the right partner to help us turn this idea into a new company? And what does that competitive landscape look like? And so he and I are in the midst of talking that through and figuring out what the best direction is based on what his other lab member wants to do, but also where the best place is to get the science move forward.
Got it. So it's really a complicated set of discussions, because if you license it to biopharma or somebody else early, Dana-Farber gives up more of it, but maybe it accelerates and improves its chances. If you wait further, Dana-Farber is putting more money into it. By the time you do license it or put it out there, you've de-risked it because it's already further along. It's less of a startup product. But a fascinating set of discussions, isn't it?
It is. And also thinking about where the best place is to do the work, right? Should the work be done in an academic lab, or should the work be done at a CRO, or should the work be done at a biotech or pharma company? Where is the work going to move it forward faster?
And where are the right resources for that? So the huge pharma company, sometimes the better resources might be there for it. That's what they do en masse. But you might have the best ideas at Dana-Farber to get things really going, or come up with ideas on how to develop the next pharma, the next vaccine, the next immunotherapy, whatever it might be.
Right.
And where are the areas that it's so loosely called or broadly called precision medicine today. More and more genetic treatment of cancers directly based on somebody's own DNA. Is that where the biggest advances are? Or what are the things that you're following? What are the big things that you're following in your role there?
Yeah, I mean, one of our kind of ultimate visions is, wouldn't it be wonderful if for every patient that walked through our doors, we knew exactly what therapy they needed based on their genomics, based on the genomics of their tumor, based on the mutation, based on so many different pieces of information. And that's really our dream, is to be able to do that diagnostic work and match that diagnostic work with the right treatment, so that you're not necessarily putting someone on a treatment that isn't right for them, you know? And so we think a lot about this space of the right treatment for the right patient. And that's ultimately not even just precision, but, you know, very personalized medicine. The other thing we think a lot about too is even preventing cancer, or catching it as early as possible. And what are the ways that we can do that? And what are the roles that we can play as a cancer center in doing some of that work? And then the third area that I would say is a little bit, maybe even less on the therapeutic side, but more on the clinical services side. You know, you said it at the beginning of this conversation that Dana-Farber really is, you know, a special, unique place. And how can we take the way that we treat our patients and scale that in a way that, you know, clinicians across the country or the world could provide similar care to what Dana-Farber doctors are doing with their patients and nurses? And so, you know, one of the things that we did in the last couple of years is we commercialized our clinical pathways with Philips Healthcare. And so being able to not just create new products out of our science, but also out of our clinical services, so that we can truly impact as many patients worldwide as possible. That's our mission, is to be able to kind of expand the number of patients we impact on a daily basis.
Thank you. And you talked about personalized medicine versus traditional chemotherapy, and certainly traditional chemotherapy, so valuable, but in so many instances, it's not a perfect match. We're choosing a tank when a scalpel could work. And so these advancements, the movement towards personalized medicine, I mean, it's really a race to get there because people are still dying every day because the chemo doesn't quite work for them or the immunotherapy or vaccines might, but it's a race to get to that personalized genetic medicine as quickly as possible, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we're learning still so much about cancer, and it's amazing how much we know. But I mean, everything from the tumor microenvironment to how chromatin remodeling impacts our cancers to immunotherapy, like you said, there's so much that we still have to learn. And immunotherapy still only impacts 30% of patients. And so how can we develop new drugs in the immunotherapy space? How can we, again, understand about the actual patient and their disease to give them the treatment that's going to work for them at this time?
With COVID in the last year, so many people have said, and work with me on this hypothesis, Leslie, and I'd love to hear your feedback on this, is that with COVID, people have said, how is it possible we've come up with a COVID vaccine in a year versus for cancer, we can't get there? Is it because cancer is really billions of different diseases based on everybody's own DNA versus a vaccine for the flu, just like we can't come up with a vaccine for AIDS exactly, because it's really billions of different diseases based on each person's DNA versus truly one virus or one series of viruses. And that's why it's so much different to come up with a cancer, a true vaccine that's not personalized, a general vaccine. Is that about right?
Yeah, you know, and I'm not a scientist, but the way that I see it and the way that it's been explained to me is really how cancer is a really smart disease. And it, I mean, think about the couple variants that we've seen in COVID, right? But what cancer does is it tricks your body and tricks the immune system into not fighting it off. And so, so again, I think even about glioblastoma and the complexities of that version of cancer, I mean, there's so many different pieces, and that's why this the combination therapy is going to drive this. I don't think, again, not a scientist, but I don't think a single vaccine is going to be the end all for a single cancer. You know, it's going to be a vaccine paired with other things because of the way that cancer behaves in our bodies. And that's the scary thing about it.
And likely a vaccine that's very personalized. Yeah. No, I think that's exactly right. And very likely a vaccine personalized to every single person, which makes it expensive and challenging until you can do that at mass. Until you can figure out how to do that at mass is a huge issue. Listen, let me ask, you sit right at this fascinating pivot point of how do you accelerate treatments and therapies at literally one of the greatest institutions in the world. If you were giving advice to somebody else serving in a chief innovation officer role, what are a couple of pieces of advice you might share with somebody else in that role?
I got a couple ideas. I mean, one thing I would say is you need to make space and enable innovation. You know, make space for people to do the work that they want to do. Sometimes it means, you know, making time for those people, whether it be clinical faculty or research faculty, to ask the questions kind of outside of their everyday work. Another piece of advice I would have is don't let anyone use as a reason, we've never done that before, or we don't do that, or that's not how we do it. I feel like if you're leading innovation, your job is to make people feel uncomfortable. And I find that when people are most uncomfortable by things that I'm doing or exploring, it means I'm going in the right direction, which is a hard job to have, and it's a hard role to be in. But I've been in many meetings where I've seen people react and say, oh God, we would never do that. And then also think about partners that can help you do what you want to accomplish faster, better, or more efficiently. You know, we don't have to do this alone, and we can't do it alone. And there's a lot of people out there that are trying to cure this disease or any other disease that we might be working on, but, you know, that others out there might be working on. So I think it's really important to identify partners that can help you achieve your goals and find partners that you want to work with, because life is too short.
No, I love all three pieces of advice. The find partners for what you're doing, make sure you're giving space for innovation, time. Mm-hmm. People say you can innovate as much as you want, but if somebody's working 80 hours a week, they can't really be, don't have the space or time to be innovative. And then the concept of, you have to be willing to make people uncomfortable. There's a great adage in business is, you've not really succeeded till somebody punches you in the nose. And what's really meant by that is, you've not really succeeded until you've made enough of an impact that people start taking shots at you. And you got to be willing to sort of get in the mix there and so forth. And I assume that a lot of scientists, a lot of leaders in this are sort of, you know, leave us alone. What's the CIO doing? What's the chief innovation officer doing? And you have to be impactful and in the middle of it to show, no, I could really help you accelerate your dreams by finding the right pathway to move this forward at a wholly different pace. And you have to be in the middle of that, with that pivot zone. One final question, Leslie, and really the age-old question. Are people smarter at the Harvard Law School or the Harvard Business School?
No comment.
Fair enough. Leslie, I want to thank you for joining us today. Really a pleasure to visit with you and really informative. Thank you for joining the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. Just remarkable work that Dana-Farber does and your entire organization does. And just a pleasure to visit with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott. I really appreciate your time, and I feel very lucky to be part of this organization. So thank you.